We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everybody. What's going on? Welcome to Talkin' Buffalo Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Patrick Moran. Thank you for locking in. It is very, very late on Thursday night, approaching midnight, actually. Had to wait to get this one in, of course. Night one in the NFL draft is in the books. We're taping this technically, I guess, Thursday, but it is casual Friday. Of course, that means I am joined, as always, by my good friend, Joe Yurden, co-host of the Maintenance Day podcast, alongside Lance Lazowski of the Buffalo News. What's going on, buddy? Been a long day, man. It's for NFL draft people, especially who really care about the draft. I'm not sure to what extent you care about the draft personally as a fan of football, but man, it's just it's the culmination of months and months. I liken it. I've said this before too. It's kind of like having a wedding. It's like you spend all this time planning all these little details, and then bam, you know, in the blink of an eye, it's gone. That's how I feel about it. Well, it's only night one of the draft. There's still six more rounds to go, but what's going on, buddy? How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. You know, I'm a draft sucker, man. Every draft, well, except for the MLB draft. The MLB draft is a joke. That whole thing's stupid. Sure. Everything about it stinks, but everything else though, man, I love it. I used to be like a huge nut on the NFL draft and the NBA draft too. NBA draft is kind of, it's a little different now because there's so many international guys, and like I'm barely paying attention to college basketball, so I doesn't really do it for me now. But like NFL and the NHL draft, they're fun because, well, at least like the NHL draft, you would get tons of trades happening. NBA sure. NBA draft has trades, but like they can't get, like they don't go through for like a couple weeks, which is weird. But now, like, you know, NFL draft didn't usually have trades. A little different this year though. Tonight made that a lot more interesting, I thought.
It was a pretty wild night. And yeah, but football fans, the draft is a big night. It feels like football, even if it's only for a weekend, it feels like football season's back. You know what I'm saying? And not,
yeah.
I mean, you know how the NFL is. It never really goes away because there's always events and stuff going on, but the draft is always big, which, by the way, I mean, we're going to talk draft, obviously Buffalo Bills here, and we'll talk a little bit of Sabres. For everybody who's watching on YouTube or listening on the audio, just a quick note for people who, you know, tune in every week for Casual Friday. Our favorite thing probably, quite honestly, to do is our starting five draft. We do it every week. It's a lot of fun. We talk shit. We have a good time doing it. We're pausing it for 1 week, this week only. And that's just because, look, A, we're taping this very late into the night. Also, Joe and I talked for a few minutes before we started recording. On Friday, the night after the draft, going into rounds 2 and 3, people want to consume as much shit as they can get their eyes and their ears on. And, you know, that does take time. And people just want to hear about that this week. So we're going to pause that for 1 week. We'll be back. Now, I know you watched at least some of the Sabres game, which, again, we'll talk about that in a minute. I ask you that because did you spend a lot of time on Twitter tonight during the draft?
Oh, yeah.
Did you?
I don't know. Not as much usually. I mean, because I had the draft on the TV, and then I had the Sabres game I'm playing on my phone, streaming it on the MSG app. So I was, you know, more consumed with that. I wasn't living on Twitter which is good because I think I know where you're going with this, because being on Twitter for drafts is
I don't understand
a bummer. It's a huge bummer.
Joe, I don't understand it. People, we wait months. You read mock drafts. You do mock drafts. You don't have to be a media person or a podcaster. Everybody does some form of a mock draft. We speculate. Mm-hmm. We spend all this time studying and guessing and playing this game, basically, to get to round one tonight. And then you go on Twitter and picks are coming minutes, literally minutes before they're announced. I'm like, where's the fun in that? I like the drama. I last until the third pick. Now, I like to, I use TweetDeck. Now, I don't know how many people out there, or if you use TweetDeck, it's basically tweets in real time, in order. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Whereas Twitter, you got to kind of, you know, if you got to push your phone down or whatever to refresh it, or, you know, hit it on the computer to refresh it, the home button, and then it comes up, not always in chronological order, whereas TweetDeck is like real time. I lasted to the third pick, and I saw Houston, I think with the third pick, they took Stingley.
Yeah.
And I'm like, the pick got spoiled. I'm like, fuck, this sucks. So that was the end of TweetDeck. And so for the rest of the night, because I still wanted to get some tweets out there. So I would tweet, but I didn't load up like my timeline. I just looked at some of my mentions and stuff. And even then, one time I said something, it got to like pick 12 or 13. I was like, this is the Bills trade up for Kyle Hamilton season, because I really wanted that to happen once they got past pick 10. And then I looked at one of my mentions and go, nope, he's going to Baltimore, pick 14. I'm like, I didn't see that on TV. It was still a good two, 3 minutes away.
Yeah, how do you still feel pick about, 11 on TV, right?
how do you feel about that as a fan, or just watching the draft, looking at Twitter and just having picks spoiled? I mean, it seems stupid.
I'm not gonna bag on reporters that get that information. Like, reporters are just doing their job. Like, you know, they hear it, they're gonna break it. That's what
I get it. I
understand that. It makes it less fun for everybody. Like, because listen, most of us that are into this, you know, as hardcore as we are, we're trying to read everything and consume everything online the same time this is all going on TV. It's, you know, it's the two screen thing. And you know, when you got, you know, because like a lot of it, it's not even so much like looking for you know, the pros takes on stuff, because it is to a degree, but more it's like, you know, the other people you follow or your friends or, you know, other fans, and like getting the reactions from people and, you know, the memes and the jokes and all that stuff. Like that's part of the experience. But, you know, when you got like the one person, you know, I think Albert Breer was doing a lot of breaking of the
one of them. In fact, he's the one who I saw, because I follow him on Twitter, that broke the Stingley, and it broke a couple other ones. But I'm like, yeah, man, I found out after that the rest of these picks in literally in real time. Like, when the Bills moved up, I didn't touch my Twitter.
Yeah,
I found out about the pick literally in real time. I was nervous too. It was weird.
More satisfying that way, honestly. Like, you know,
it was weird, man. And I'll tell you, all right, so let's start here with the Bills. We'll talk about the Bills. They move up from 25 to 23. So they move up two spots, and they gave up their fourth round pick, overall pick 130, to do it. And they took a cornerback, K.R. Elam from Florida. He's 21 years old, 6'1", 190. I've heard a lot about it. Again, I did a 5-week mock series with Aaron Quinn on from Cover One. So we talked about the kid plenty. He is very athletic, which is the complete opposite of Levi Wallace. Levi Wallace was a steady defender, but not the most athletic guy. Elam is like pretty much a literal opposite. Incredible athlete. He was a first team all SEC in 2020. His film looked great. I remember Eric Turner from Cover One was talking his film up and down from 2020. Didn't have really great film this year though, but I've also read that a lot of that is because teams just didn't throw much at him. So his stats weren't there and the film wasn't there as much. Has good bloodlines. His father played at Notre Dame, Abram Elam. He played in the NFL, and his uncle Matt was a very good Baltimore Raven first round pick. So the bloodlines are there. Bruce Nolan from Buffalo Rumblings said it perfectly. He says he's young and toolsy, and that fits like the Bills archetype for the type of young players that they like to get, really skilled guys who can be coached up. What were your thoughts? And at the end of the day, you know, we talk drafts some on here over the last, you know, handful of weeks or whatever. Did we overthink everything else? Did I overthink everything else? Because, I mean, we sat here and we talked about running back and, you know, how they can get a guy who maybe brings a different skill set coming out of the backfield. A lot of people talked about wide receiver, maybe solidifying the offensive line a little bit. And don't get me wrong, they still very well might do these things. Just they didn't do it with their priority, not their first pick. You know, defense, replacing maybe Jordan Poyer, getting a replacement ready for Tremaine Edmonds. We talked about all that stuff. At the end of the day, corner was the one position on this need or on this team that was a quote unquote need. You know, Trey White's coming off the ACL, which, by the way, I did find interesting tonight, Joe. Brandon Bean, during his presser immediately after the pick, says he hopes Trey White's ready for the start of the season. And didn't sound quite as confident as leading into this draft. And I don't know if that's intentional or not, but it's not a lock he's going to be ready. And obviously, they got Dane Jackson, and that's it. So at the end of the day, it's like, I guess I'm asking you a two-part here. Do we overthink everything else? And what are your thoughts on this pick from what you've heard and seen so far?
Well, we all definitely overthought everything because there's so much time to go over everything. Like you start picking apart every position, every weakness, every strength and saying like, well, why would they take a running back when they got this going on? Or they have to take a running back because of this, you know, why would they take, you know, why would they take this position because they got all these guys? Or like, well, if something happens to like three of these guys, then they're screwed. Like you start looking into all these ways around it. And yeah, you're going to overthink everything. It's easy to, because I mean, you know, you have so many guys out there that could fit the profile for any of those things. You can come up with the perfect plan or perfect idea, no matter what. So yeah, so it's definitely overthinking on everybody's part. So yeah, listen, if you nailed the pick correct in your mock drafts, hey, congrats, you did a good job. But I mean, you know, if you're gonna feel like you're gonna cold take yourself by saying, you know, why didn't they just take this guy? This would have been better. Like, so who cares? It's fine. You know, tomorrow's another day, and like everything will be okay. But the Elam pick, like taking a corner, I think is smart. Yeah, his numbers this past season weren't great. He had really, really solid numbers 2 years ago, 2020. So that's encouraging. I think they had alluded to saying he's a little bit banged up last year. I think there was some kind of issue there, unless I'm getting confused with somebody else. Maybe I am. I don't know. But like the one thing that was expressed about him that I think stood out to me, at least perked my ears up, was that he's their deep threat cover guy because he's got the speed.
Sure.
And that's a necessary thing to have. I mean, it was, you know, obviously, you know, Kansas City doesn't have Tyreek Hill anymore. The Dolphins do. So that's,
he runs,
you know,
like a 4.39. He runs like a 4.39. He's a blazer. He's fast. He's a good fast athlete, man.
So, you know, you need to have somebody like that can keep up with guys of that caliber, because that's, you know, for, you know, everybody's spreading it out, you know, in the past games, and there's always going to be some guy who can blaze it down the field. So you need somebody that can keep up. So that way you're not playing like deep cover zones constantly and getting picked apart underneath. If you got somebody that can run with a streaker, cool. Like that works. Just got to hope you can cover him well. That's the only thing. Like he can run with him, but if he keeps getting toasted, then that's no good. But one of the things, one of the guys on the ESPN panel said, and I forget who it was, but he had mentioned how, in previous seasons, you know, last season or previous seasons, that if a receiver made a move on him and like got him kind of faked out and beat him, you know, beat him for a play, it stuck with him.
Yeah.
And that to me is I think that's something you can work out of a guy. Like you can fix that. Like just, you know, working on the guy's mental, you know, the mental strengths and getting him on base with that. But you know, man, NFL's a sport that will break your heart constantly with that stuff. I mean, geez, the one guy from Kansas City who kept getting dusted by Gabe Davis in the AFC title game. Like, I mean, that dude ended up leaving Kansas. Yeah, of course he went to Detroit. Of course he did. But you know, but like that dude, I mean, like you got to have the shortest. You got to have the shortest memory. To do that, you got to forget that stuff. I mean, yeah, if the guy's going to run his mouth at you and be like, "Yo, burned you again, man. Sucks to be you." Like, okay, but it's the NFL. Like, that's every play that can happen. Every, you know, freak things can happen all over the place. So I'll be really interested to see if that's that's something that continues into the NFL for him, because that could be a big problem if it doesn't get addressed.
It could be. And another thing I've heard about him pre-draft, I didn't hear about it tonight, but I remember, and I can't remember where I read it, but I know it was from somebody credible, because I remember that it stuck with me, is he isn't the most physical, engaging, run-defending tackler. So, again, that could be perceived as a negative. Corner, I totally get. Look, man, Miami's got Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill now. The Jets got Elijah Moore. They drafted Garrett Wilson tonight. This is a division with some really good receivers, and this was a weak spot. Plus, another thing I like about him, opposed to some other corners that were available in this draft, is he's an outside guy, and that's what they need. They didn't need a nickel guy. They didn't need a slot corner. They got Teron Johnson for that.
Right.
So he's an outside guy. This is the guy who's going to take over for Levi Wallace. Good rookie contract or a good deal. I was looking it up. I looked at SpotTrack. So this is what happens when this is why you draft rookies, because of the labor, the cost of it. He's going to sign a 4-year, $13.7 million contract. It's obviously fully guaranteed because they're first-year players. His cap, it's going to be $2.4 million as a rookie, and then he'll have a fifth-year option. So you got a first-round corner, premium position as a cornerback. You get him for 5 years. It makes sense. I will say this, too. My mock drafts, I did 5 with Aaron. I did 1 by myself. And in all due respect to every single Bills content creator out there, and there's a lot of them, I never saw one person take care of Elam with the Bills to the Bills with it, which again means absolutely dog shit. Who cares? Right. Brandon Bean had some pretty interesting comments. Who knows? I mean, was he being truthful? Who knows? But
believe nothing. Right.
Well, so Kansas City jumped up to 21 to get Trent McDuffie, which, by the way, I was surprised. I thought Trent McDuffie would be gone by 15. Mm-hmm. Started getting the 17, 18. I'm like, Now again, after Stingley and Sauce Gardner, like every corner in this draft had some kind of issues. When Trent McDuffie was supposed to, he's got really short arms, and that was the knock on him. Yeah. Anyway, Kansas City goes up and gets him, and Brandon Bean decided that Elam was the last guy, according to Brandon Bean. I'm going to read his direct quote. We had a big grade on Kier, and we were down to one first-round grade on our board. This is what Brandon Bean said. He was the last player on their board who they had a first round grade on. So that's in part because a lot of people are like, well, why did you move up 2 spots? Mm-hmm. Well, that's why. And then he also said, I've been hearing it loud and clear from everyone that we needed to add a cornerback. It's a pick that makes a lot of sense. And again, none of us are experts, Joe. We don't know. Yeah. Like Andrew Booth Jr., if he's healthy, I'm telling you now, he's a top 12 pick. He didn't even go in the first round tonight.
Yeah.
So that tells you that, you know, the medical is not great on him. And Aaron Quinn and I have talked about this when we were doing our mocks. We could do these and we could talk about players and you can watch all the film in the world. And it's the same with any sport, hockey too. You can watch film and tape on these guys and read up on them and study them. But unless you're in that room, like that organizational war room, you really don't know what the teams are thinking. You don't know what the medical is on these guys. You don't know what some off ice or off field stuff may be. And every year, guys go way higher than you think, and guys who you think are going to be top 15 picks don't even get drafted at all. Mm-hmm. My thought is this, and this is the difference between being a Bills fan and a Sabres fan right now. Well, maybe that's changing a little bit, but when you're a Bills fan right now, I trust, it sounds corny, but I trust the organization that they're doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. I personally was not excited about the pick. I'm just being honest with you, and that's my knee-jerk reaction. I was talking to a couple buddies following along and texting during the draft. And I was like, you know, I want the running back, or I want Andrew Booth Jr. or maybe Daxon Hill. I said, I don't want Kyler Gordon and I don't want Kyler Elam. Mm-hmm. And they took him. So that was my first reaction, but you trust the organization to make a good pick. And that's the benefit, the perk of having a winning organization right now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, That's definitely a perk of having the wins to back up the moves that you're making. Mm-hmm. You know, you can go through some of Bean's draft history and put some pretty big circles around some guys where it's kind of like, all right, man, you might have missed on that one.
Sure, yeah.
You know, there's a healthy number of guys where, you know, they're taking in maybe the first 3 rounds that you're going like, no, man, they haven't done anything yet. Like, you know, maybe they'll blossom in a year or so, but you basically got, you know, the rookie deal, you got 4 years to figure it out. And if you don't by then, you know, peace out, see ya. But you know, you have to have some hope on guys like this. And, you know, certainly the talent's there, the ability's there, the raw skill is there. So, you know, at that point in the draft, you know, you're talking, you know, mid late first round. You know, it's too cliche to say best player on the board, but you know, when it's the NFL, you zero in on a position, and if there's not a guy that stands out absolutely, but you got to grab somebody. Like if there's a group, like say there's like three or four corners there that you're like, we can take one of these guys, but which one is it going to be? Then you start breaking it down by like, okay, well, who has the upside? Who's got the tools? Who's somebody that we can mold? Who's somebody that we can coach into this position and make them better? That's how you can break that stuff down. And that's where I think you get that hands-on approach from the scouts, where they're going to the games, they're talking to all these guys, they're talking to people and figuring out who can be coached up, who can handle that, or who's a guy that's not going to listen to a coach and just say like, whatever, man, I'll just do it my way. Like, that's the kind of stuff you got to break down, when you're picking through these things. And certainly at that position in the draft, you got to be on the ball with that. You just can't just pull a name and be like, well, hope it works. You can't do that stuff. So
yeah,
Bean doesn't do something without giving a proper research and due diligence. But then it's just a question of, does he make the right call? I hate picking on AJ Epenesa, but like that's a kind of a big standout one there.
Cody Ford too.
Yeah.
Both second round picks. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's stuff like that. And people circle back and be like, oh, Spencer Brown, he was a third round pick. Okay. Well, cool. Like you got it around on the other side of it. So that's good. But yeah, I mean, you're not going to kill a guy day one of the picks, unless you're the Patriots and you're taking a third round lineman in the first round. But
yeah,
we'll get into that, I'm sure. But it's fine. Like, it's fine. Like, it's not an exciting pick. It's not a sexy pick for the Bills. But like, if you got a team that's built the way they are right now, you don't need to make a splashy, sexy pick. Like,
it needs to be. You a don't sensible need to do pick. That,
that's right? Sensible. Sensible.
It makes and a lot like, of sense.
You know, but like, if there's an opportunity to move up, and I think there was, and Bean said that, like, they didn't talk to anybody outside, north of 20 to try to trade up.
Yeah.
Which I don't know about that. I think when you see Kyle Hamilton slipping down the board, you're kind of like, all right, where can we get to that we can get that guy? So, it's draft season. Don't believe anything you hear, just take it for what it's worth at face value and go from there.
Bean said that they were considering moving down. Let me tell you a couple other things I like about the Elam pick. I like that last year there was a lot of talk and a lot of rumors that the Bills wanted Travis Etienne, that they were going to go running back in the first round. It was a really hot topic discussion. It was probably the biggest water cooler discussion throughout draft season last year. And we'll never know, because Travis Etienne went to Jacksonville before the Bills got on the clock. What I like right now is there was a lot of Breece Hall talk, which, by the way, Brandon Bean kind of refuted that and said those reports and rumors did not come from inside that building, because there was a lot of talk about the Bills taking Hall. Mm-hmm. And you got it. And here's the reason why you take his word for it. Because guess what? Guess it was on the board this time.
Yep.
Hall was there. So if he really did value that type of running back this high in the first round, well, then he would have taken it, and he didn't. So I like the fact that Breece Hall was there and that they didn't go that route. And Elam was the fourth corner taken at pick 23. That means for the last nine picks, there are other corners that I saw. I had Andrew Booth Jr. That's who I wanted the Bills to take as my corner. Mm-hmm. I know Sal Capaccio, Matt Perino both had Kyler Gordon in their final Bills mock drafts over the last couple of days. Malik Wooden was another guy who was supposed to go around the first round. None of those guys ended up going in the first round at all. So it wasn't just like the Bills took a guy and then, Gordon goes two picks later and Wooden goes three picks later. You know what I'm saying? It's like no other cornerback won in the first round. So there were other teams, good teams, because they're drafting late, who did not value those guys as first round guys either. Mm-hmm. That makes me feel better about the Elam pick. So I like the fact that, like last year, for an example, the Bills took Greg Rizzo, And I can't remember off the top of my head, but I know for a fact two or three defensive ends went right after him. And I'm like, great, we're going to be comparing these guys for years. Not really going to do that with corner because, again, there was nobody who went immediately after Elam. Mm-hmm. So I like that. And, again, I like the fact that the running back was there. So now that question was answered. There was linebackers available, which I was quite – Devin Lloyd. I was surprised he was there. Mm-hmm. It tells you about Tremaine. Tremaine is not a rat that Tremaine's gone. I still say if they would have taken a safety or a linebacker in the first round, that was 100% meaning, all right, these guys are going to be one and done. I'm talking about mm-hmm. Boyer or Edmonds. So we don't know. But you know what? Do you agree with that? I like the fact that you got your answer at running back, at least for the first round. That's not to say tomorrow night or Friday night that the Bills are going to take a running back in round two. But it wasn't their top priority like some people thought it might be. And I like the fact that there were no other corners that went over the last nine picks after Elam. You agree with that?
It's, I look at the, you mentioned when they picked Rousseau and there was a handful of DNs that went after him last year. And like, to me that, I don't know, that's like the stuff that happens at a fantasy draft where you pick a guy, then suddenly, you know, three other people behind you are like, oh crap, we got to get somebody at that position too.
Like
if one of their guys, you know, if you take somebody that was high, you know, that was high on their board and they're just like, oh crap, we got to get a guy. We got to get him now. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't get snaked out. You know, we're not going to lose, you know, we're not going to come around the second round and, you know, and maybe not get any of the guys that we were looking at. So let's just grab them. I think on the corner side of things, that kind of stuff, it just all depends on what teams are looking for. Really. I mean, it's, you know, your first round and you're not in that best player available spot yet. You know, like you've got one or two picks maybe in the first round, depending on what you do. You know, you're picking out positions where you're like, okay, we could use some help here, or we've got a guy, you know, we've got our eyes on somebody that's going to make an impact now. You know, I think that's, you know, other teams behind them, you know, had bigger pressing needs than corner. You know, that's the way that I look at that. Could some other team grab the other corner? Yeah, sure. I mean, why not? But that was what the Bills need was. And it seems like I'm doing a very, you know, like Zen sort of way of looking at this, but it's just like, no, the Bills stay within themselves. They're like, okay, corner's the spot we're going to address. So let's get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and honestly, you look up and down the roster. I mean, the way, you know, you look at the way Singletary played at the end of the season, and how good he looked, and like how much they trusted him to do a lot. That to me makes running back much less of a, you know, of a need to be addressed to me. I mean, I know they seem to have gone a little bit south on Zach Moss, you know, and they always find a veteran to plug into that third spot. So it's, you know, no big deal there, but it seemed to me that the way that they liked how Singletary played at the end of the year, that made it less of a need to grab a running back, you know, with Trey White's injury and, you know, given how Bean said that they're hoping he's going to be ready for the start of the season. You know, that to me says like, we need a guy, like we got to get a guy in here. So we better grab one right off the bat. If you want to get a running back, I mean, listen, running backs slip down the board constantly. Like that's
not one back in the first round. No, there were no running backs taken in the first round tonight.
Right. So, I mean, and that's a position that used to be like major need. You know, there's always like two or three running backs going in the first round.
Right.
It ain't that league now. Like running backs they're useful, but like, you know, they're not necessary in, you know, so to speak. But, you know, in Buffalo's case, it's like, well, we got Singletary. We don't need to add another running back to the, you know, to that room and say, okay, we got that taken care of. I mean, yeah, you want to add stuff on offense because, you know, you just basically, you know, everybody's in an arms race in the AFC. But if you want a running back, just grab one in the second round, grab one in the third round. Like where they get Singletary, the Singletary was a third round pick, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, you know, you can find really solid talent through there. I mean, if there's not a guy that just like jumps off the page and, you know, you're like, wow, gotta have him, wait on it. Like if everybody else in the pack of guys that you could pick from are, you know, more or less similar or like same level talent, just wait.
Yeah.
You know, there'll be running backs for them to grab in the second round if they want to do that. I mean, hell, there's a lot you can do. That's why it was crazy to see six receivers go in the first round this year because receiver six was kind of the same way.
Six of the first 18 picks.
Yeah. Six, I mean, that was a position that went on a run, like yeah. right in the middle, like three, yeah. like what, three in a row went, you know, Detroit traded up to get, got up to 12 to take a receiver. Like, I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, it is. One last thing with the Bills, and then we will, I want to take a quick break and then I want to come back. I want to go around the league a little bit, starting actually with your team, the Detroit Lions. I want to talk about them for a few, but I'll say this too about the Bills. When I did my last mock draft just yesterday, I said that there were three positions that I really wanted to make sure I addressed with the first three picks, and that was running back, corner, and interior offensive line guard. Not necessarily in any specific order either. And obviously they went corner. I look at round two going into this draft, and I still want the Bills to take a running back, but I want them to take a specific type of running back. I think it was very telling that they went after J.D. McKissic early in free agency because he's a really good pass catcher out of the backfield. And I think that might be the one element on this offense that they do not have. Singletary's okay out of the backfield, but he's not a breakaway kind of guy. James Cook is a running back from Georgia. Most people, I look at most boards, and they got third-round grades, but I'd be very happy with him in the second round. Rashard White is another running back. I would like him. So either of those guys, there's a couple guards I like still, Dylan Partham, Sean Ryan, and Ingram, Cam Jurgens. There's a safety, Juwan Brisker. There's a lot of talent still to go, and sometimes we spend so much time looking forward to tonight because it's such a big deal that we forget that this is one round. And that there's still six more to go. And drafts are made to me in rounds two through four. You know what I mean? That's where you really find some good players and the cream rises to the crop, the guys who are best at drafting. But anyway, I am happy and I'm satisfied. It was a sensible pick. Let's just leave it at that. I'm not blown away. I don't think it was a sexy pick, but it makes a lot of sense. I wanted to move up for Hamilton. I wanted to move up for Stingley because stupid me thought he might be around pick 12, 13. I remember saying Thursday afternoon, I'm like, all right, Stingley or Hamilton are there come 11 or 12. So I remember Washington picked 11th. I was like, this is like trade up kind of territory. Yeah, Stingley was gone freaking three. And Hamilton ended up going to Baltimore at 14, which pisses me off. But anyway, let's take a real quick break because I do want to go around the league and go through over. We'll find out a couple teams that had a couple or some good drafts. And one of them are your boys, man, the Detroit Lions. So be right back, folks.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, I'm back with Joe. And quickly, I do want to give, well, I will give Detroit credit, but I also think Jacksonville, I don't know, man. If I had the top pick of the draft, I'm taking Aiden Hutchinson. And I think he was gifted to Detroit with the second pick. Not to say that Walker's going to be a bust or a bum for Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. It just seems like a big boomer bust type of pick, whereas I think Hutchinson is a safe player that is going to be really good. And he goes to Detroit, and then Detroit moves from 32 to 12, 20 spots they move up.
Yeah.
And they go get Jameson Williams, which, you know, he's injured right now, so who knows when he's going to be healthy. But this dude is probably the best receiver in the draft. And and I'll tell you what, too, because when I first, I was like, wow, they must have gave up the fucking farm to get him. I looked it up. They really didn't. So this is what Detroit gave up. They gave up 8 spots in round 2. So they moved back 8 spots. They swapped and go back 8 spots in round 2. Mm-hmm. And then they give up their third rounder. That's not a lot to move up 20 spots in round 1. Usually you're talking a first pick next year and more. So the price of poker was cheap for Detroit. And to their credit, they moved up. Man, they got DJ Chalk. They got Hockenson. They got DeAndre Swift. I mean, Detroit's got a long way to go. Hutchins is a real nice piece for that defense.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a Detroit fan, and you are, I'm pretty excited about this draft, and I'm pretty excited about the future. One other thing, too, because they had plenty of opportunities to take quarterback, and they didn't. Mm-hmm. I think this is let Jared Goff play this year, and next year's quarterback class is supposed to be significantly better. So they'll have ammunition. Go get your guy next year, whatever. But you got some pieces in place if you're a Detroit Lion. Good. Jameson Williams and Aiden Hutchinson, man. You got arguably the best defensive end and the best wide receiver in this class, and you got them both.
Yeah.
That's a good deal for Detroit, a good haul.
Yeah, I mean, trading 32 and 34 to move up to 12. I know there's, they've got like the table that figures out like, you know, what pick is worth what.
Oh, I figured it out, Joe.
I don't know. Like that, that seems like a good deal.
Detroit got the, if you go by the old draft value chart, I don't have it in front of me, but I do know for a fact, because I did look it up, because I thought it was really lopsided. It wasn't. It favored Detroit by like a couple hundred points, which is like the equivalent of a third round pick. That's what I'm saying. Detroit didn't give up that much to move up 20 spots.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, they still get their second round pick. It's just a little bit lower
than
the second round.
Picks lower. Who gives a shit?
What they do? Who cares? Yeah. I don't know. It's surprising to have them making competent decisions. You know, we've talked all year about, you know, the Sabres, like, yeah, they're still a bad team, but like things are feeling good about them. That's exactly what the Lions were at the end of last season. Like the last few weeks of the year, they played pretty strong games. You know, there's a couple of games where like they probably shouldn't have lost, but they did. You know, that's what happens. The Lions, they lose games, but like they, you know, a couple of the games they won, like I think the game against Minnesota, like that was a, it was a huge win for them. I mean, it wasn't a huge win in the grand scheme of things, but
right,
you know, for them, that was a really impressive win. And you know, the vibes are strong. Dan Campbell, you know, people were joking on him, myself included, for all the, you know, the weird stuff he was saying and, you know, the preseason and just all the goofball, you know, we're biting kneecaps off and crap like that. I was like, okay, man, like just chill out. But the guys love him. The team goes through a wall for that guy. And, you know, that says a lot to have a bad team that has a coach that they'll rally around. I mean, you know, Lions back in the day had a good team and they had a bad coach that they rallied around. So, I mean, you know, that's how things work sometimes. But I mean, Campbell's done something there that's kind of, it's doing something that hasn't been around in Detroit in some time, where there's a positivity, you know, within the room. You know, there's not like that gloom that just looms over everything constantly. You know, it affects everybody and everything. It's not totally there right now. The funny thing is, though, like you listed it out. You know, they add DJ Chark, they add Jameson, they draft Jameson Williams. Amon-Ra St. Brown's an unbelievable that they got him.
I forgot about him. Shit, man, he's right. Good too. Weapons, man.
He set some rookie records for the franchise last year. Like, Jared, it's crazy.
Jared Goff ain't gonna have no excuses, man. And a lot of weapons on that team.
somebody pointed out
they're gonna block for him, but
well, the line's a little bit better. The line definitely played better at the end of the year. Penei Sewell was the first round pick last year. Mm-hmm. Dynamite selection. That kid's good. So I mean, yeah, there's no excuse for Jared Goff. Although somebody pointed out, like, Jared Goff's excuse is that he's Jared Goff. And I'm like, no, you know, you're not totally wrong there. But, you know, but like, he's got the, he's going to have the receivers around him. Swift is a damn good running back. You know, like, he can grind out yards, but also he can catch the ball out of the backfield too. He's good at that. Hockenson's an outstanding tight end.
I love Hockenson.
You know, that was a pick where they made that I was just kind of like, dude, what are you taking a tight end for? This is stupid. And then I was like, no, he's actually really good. So that's fine. Cause I was too stung by, you know, the past years of, you know, taking Eric Ebron before, you know, two or three picks before Aaron Donald, you know, like,
sure.
Come on, you know, things like that. Brandon Pettigrew back in the day, like, these dudes couldn't catch a cold playing in Detroit. And then, you know, get a guy like Hockenson where it's like, okay, big, you know, big corn fed guy from Iowa. Great. Cool. But he's been as advertised. He's dynamite. So the offense could be fun. Like, the NFC, we talked about how good the AFC is going to be and how much of a knockdown drag out it's going to be. NFC is going to be weak as hell.
Yeah.
So, you know, Detroit, I mean, if they can score some points and stop some teams, they could be in a spot where, you know, a crappy record is going to get you in the playoffs in the NFC.
Every year, no doubt
about that.
Joe, every year there's teams that come out of nowhere. They go from worst to not necessarily first, but the Cincinnati Bengals were 4-11-1. And then the next year they're in the Super Bowl. Now, I'm not saying the Detroit Lions are going to the Super Bowl next year. However,
if they do, you're going to have to peel me off the floor. Well, okay.
Guess what? 365 days ago, Joe, I would have told you, well, the Cincinnati Bengals, they might go. They went to the Super Bowl. So yeah. I'm just saying, it does happen. You look at this draft as a whole, and I'm going to pull it up here on the screen. If you're watching this on YouTube anyway, I'm not going to read every single pick. Trayvon Walker going first overall. I'm not going to say it was stunning, because there were a lot of rumblings coming over the last couple weeks or a handful of days at least that it could happen. I'm still somewhat surprised by it. And then, like I said, Hutchinson going the first. The real shocker to me was Stingley going third overall to Houston. I really love what the Jets did. Sorry, Bills fans, but you know, keeping it real here, man. I mean, so they get Sauce Gardner. He's the best corner in the draft. I think he is. I think he's better than Stingley. Mm-hmm. That's just my opinion. But anyway, they get him fourth, and you need a guy like Gardner, because guess what? You know, we talked about Buffalo having to defend Miami. And the Jets, well, Sauce Gardner is going to be seeing a lot of Stephon Diggs and Tyreek Hill for a long time to come. But then they go in to get Garrett Wilson with the 10th pick, because they had the 4th and the 10th pick. He is a really good wide receiver. Him and Elijah Moore, that's a really good receiving tandem for Zach Wilson to find out kind of what he's got. You know, we spent so much time talking about Tua Tagovailoa and if he's going to be a bust. Time to find out a little bit about Zach Wilson too.
Yeah.
You know, they got some.
He's
got
to stay healthy. That's right. The thing.
Yeah, for sure. And then they traded in or back up near the end of the first round and got Jermaine Johnson, a defensive end who many people had going in the top 10. So they had like three guys who a lot of people thought would be in the top 10, and they got them in the first round. So I was really impressed with them. Then you go through this. What else we got here? The Giants, they picked at 5-7. They get an edge guy and a tackle.
I like the Giants draft. I think they got a couple of bang up guys there. Thibodeau was a guy that if Hutchinson went first, Thibodeau was going to be a Lion. I would have guaranteed that.
And I think it would have been a pretty good pick.
Evan Neal's really good.
Personally, again, neither was their GMs, but I'm going to be honest with you. I would have took Thibodeau over Walker.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't know. It's just something about Walker. I think that I follow that Georgia defense pretty closely. Mm-hmm. And there's just a bunch of superstars on that defense. They made a lot of other, they make everyone look good. So then we get a little run on offensive linemen. Seattle took a Charles Cross at 9. We talked about the Jets already. The Saints, this is when the trade started going nuts at 11, man. Mm-hmm. I was like, when the Bills are going to get on this? Because I really wanted Hamilton. But anyway, so the Saints move up and get Chris Olave. He's a receiver that Aaron and I took in 2 Bills mock drafts. And then, of course, Detroit moves up for Jameson Williams. So you had your one in receivers there. 10, 11, and 12 were all receivers. Philly moves up, and they take Jordan Davis, which I think that was a mistake. But and then Baltimore. Boy,
some of that tape that Booger McFarland was showing on him on
Jordan Davis?
On Jordan Davis against Georgia, where he's just loafing it, man. Like he's not like it's a pass play, and he's just kind of like, yeah, whatever. I ain't going after it. I was like, dude, I see that tape and I'm like, do not draft that guy ever, please. But I know he's a run stopper, but like, it's not a running league, man.
Well, it's weird because Philly, it was rumored or it was assumed that they were trying to trade up to get a receiver. And then they don't, because three receivers go in front of them.
Yeah, I think Detroit screwed them, honestly.
And it's, well, they also had a big trade for a receiver worked out. We'll get to that in a second. Mm-hmm. So anyway, then Baltimore, Kyle Hamilton, of course, falls to the fucking Ravens. That really, if there's one pick in the first round that really makes me angry, it's that pick. Not even so much because the Bills didn't get him, because I never thought the Kyle Hamilton was going to the Bills. I didn't think he was going to be there at 14. And I certainly didn't think he would just fall into the laps of the Ravens. So that really pisses me off. He's
what a defense for him to line up on, crying out loud.
He's got perennial Pro Bowler written all over him on that defense. Houston was up next, and this was a surprise. Kenyon Green, they took a guard. I say a surprise because I thought Zion Johnson would be the top guard off the board. And every mock we've done or people I've talked to, it felt like Zion Johnson would be the top guard. But anyway, Houston goes guard. Good pick. Then Washington goes another receiver, Jahan Dotson. And then Zion Johnson goes to the Chargers. By the way, the Chargers offensive line is going to be significantly better. So then Tennessee.
It needs to be. Really needs to be. They got to do it for Herbert.
So after thinking that Philly struck out on wide receivers, we get news from Adam Schefter, who, by the way, did not appear on ESPN. I guess is a kid graduating from high school or something like that. So he was at a graduation. But he did tweet out breaking news. The Tennessee Titans traded A.J. Brown to the Philadelphia Eagles. That's a big trade. A.J. Brown's a beast, man. And they got him and Devontae Smith. So Philly's going to see what they really got in Jalen Hurts. But anyway, Tennessee takes Treylon Burks, which was a sixth receiver. The Saints didn't trade it up for a lineman. Pittsburgh was up next. They took the only quarterback of the first round, Kenny Pickett. And then Kansas City moves up, and they go get Trent McDuffie, which made me mad because I really thought the Bills were going to get McDuffie. Once it got to be to Pittsburgh, I was like, all right, I think McDuffie's going to fall here.
Can I just say something about Steelers taking Kenny Pickett? It's amazing that an organization would still be affected by not drafting Dan Marino back in 1984. like that was fresh in their mind. They're like, we're not letting another pick quarterback get away from us. Was destiny. He was going to get taken by the Steelers. Like, probably
the
cool.
And probably if you watched the draft on TV, probably the coolest moment of the night was his reaction. I thought that was really cool, man. He was overcome completely with emotion. I totally get it. I thought that was, I love that human element. I thought that was awesome. But anyway, I feel like if the Bills really wanted Trent McDuffie, if that was really their guy and they really wanted him, they could have moved up and got him, and they didn't. So maybe maybe Elam was right there with him.
Do you think the Patriots are going to make that trade with them?
No. I'm saying they could have went to 19. They could have moved up to 20 maybe, because Pittsburgh obviously still could have got Pickett. But anyway, so yeah, Kansas City moves up to get McDuffie. The New England moves down. Green Bay takes the first. So they got two first round picks. I'm like, all right, well, they lose Devontae Adams, but six or seven receivers have already went. What the hell are they going to do? They take a linebacker, by the way, a linebacker that I like a ton. I love Quay Walker. I thought that was a good pick, but anyway, he's a linebacker. Then the Bills move up. They get Elam. Dallas takes an offensive lineman. Baltimore gets another guy. Tyler Linderbaum, by the way, a center, falls into their lap. Many people thought he was like a top 12 player. So again, Baltimore gets two first round picks. They did trade Hollywood Brown, by the way. Then we talked about the Jets already. Jacksonville moves up. They get Devin Lloyd. A lot of people had him as a top linebacker. I like that pick. Green Bay has another pick, and they take a defensive lineman. So they took two front seven guys on the defense. Didn't touch. I can't imagine Aaron Rodgers feeling pretty good right now. Let's just put it that way.
What? So then, go ahead. You were watching some of the Pat McAfee stream tonight, weren't you?
I watched it for a little bit until
because Rodgers was on there tonight.
Well, I didn't see that because I stopped watching it because again they kind of spoiled a couple picks. I just refused to have that shit done. So all right, so anyway, Green Bay takes two front seven guys, and then at the very end of the first round, two safeties I like a lot. Daxon Hill goes to Cincy. Cincinnati's had a real, by the way, the Bengals have had a very good fucking offseason. And people don't want to talk about that team. They want to talk about the Bills and the Chiefs and a couple other AFC teams. The Bengals are an AFC champions, and they've had a really good offseason, man. They've solidified that offensive line. I like Daxon Hill. I think he's going to be a really good kind of utility knife defensive back for them. And then Minnesota with the last pick in the first round took Lewis Cyan, a safety that I like a lot. He's an eight-second missile. I like that dude. Anyway, I do want to talk for a minute about the New England Patriots, okay? Mm-hmm. So they moved down to 29. I don't know. You know, we take the Bills, all right? The Bills have not been able to get over the Kansas City hump. Say 2 years ago when they lost, they said, we have to be able to beat the Chiefs, and we got to build our team to beat the Chiefs. I don't understand what New England's doing. Did they not watch? Did they forget about Josh Allen in the playoffs last year? If you're going to try to win your division, your goal is to win your division, right? Mm-hmm. That's how you get in the playoffs. That's how you get a home game in the playoffs. Why are you not adding as many pieces to the defense as humanly possible to try to stop and contain Josh Allen? You know, the Bills knew to beat Kansas City, they had to get a pass rush. So they couldn't get to Patrick Mahomes 2 years ago. They go out, they draft two defensive ends with their first pick last year, Rizzo and Boogie. Now they, even though, you know, and then they go side behind Miller because Mahomes ran wild on him again. They know mm-hmm. that's how you got to beat the Chiefs. The New England Patriots draft a fucking guard. Yeah. The third guard on the board.
From Chattanooga.
Cole Strange. Yo, listen, man, this guy might become a pretty good pro. I got nothing against the guy.
Yeah.
Every single, and I know prospect rankings don't mean shit, but I have not seen this guy even go in the second round of a mock draft that I've seen personally.
Yeah.
They're not drafting guy. Again, did they not watch the freaking Buffalo Bills, what they did to him? How do you not address a defense? There were a lot. I just named some good safeties. I named some good linebackers. How are you drafting a guard?
Yeah. I think the tape that they were watching of the loss to Buffalo had to do with the offensive side of the ball, because Mac Jones, he had no help back there at all. But still, I don't know.
Draft a guard later, man.
Right. Belichick, I can't crap on him. I just can't. It's very hard for me to do that. If I were a Pats fan, I'd probably be, you know, shitting a brick about, you know, making this kind of selection. But but I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, Mac Jones needs some protection, you know, back there. I mean, you got to get that guy some time to do some stuff. But don't you have other more pressing needs? If you need a guard, you could have picked that dude in the third round. Pick him in the second round. Like, who gives a shit?
You know what your pressing need is?
You're not missing out. Like, you're not going to miss out on getting him by taking him there.
You know what your biggest pressing need is, Joe? To not give up seven touchdowns and seven drives against the Buffalo Bills in the playoffs.
Right.
And I feel like maybe having a couple guys on defense that can make a play might contain them a little bit. You're right.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they don't need a guard. I'm not saying to protect Matt Jones is a bad idea. But that's a real reach.
Yeah, in the first round.
Listen,
if they take Lewis Cyan, like if you take Lewis Cyan at that spot, that would have been a super
Hill,
pick.
Or Daxton or Hill.
Yeah, Daxton Hill. If the Lions were still picking at 32, either one of those guys was somebody that I was like, man, take either one of those guys there because they could use that. But Pats could use that guy. I mean, I know they got some hot shots in the secondary, but like your secondary got shredded in the playoffs, man. Like, you need help. You can look at it and say, like, oh, well, it's just one game. It's like, yeah, it was a one game in a very big spot. Like, you can't get roasted like that and not address it.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, before we get out of here, because again, it's going to be a very interesting Friday night tonight, I guess, night two of the draft. Night two of the draft is my favorite night, by the way. I study up enough on prospects that I say I'm 3 to 4 rounds deep where I pretty much know a decent amount about all the prospects that are probably going to go in those rounds. And I love getting two or even three players to talk about as opposed to one. So that'll be interesting. The Bills don't have a fourth round pick currently. They got a second and a third. So we'll see what happens tonight. Before we get out of here, though, I just want to spend a couple minutes talking about the Buffalo Sabres. Certainly not going to shit on them for one game, because this team has been playing very, very well of late. Mm-hmm. They've been playing pretty well, just generally speaking now, for the last couple months. But they slept walk, I guess, in Boston tonight. They decided to take a nap during this game. I'm going to be completely transparent with you. I didn't watch but maybe 3 minutes of the game because I was fixated on the draft. But the Sabres go to Boston. They lose 5-0. Our old friend Linus Ullmark got a, I believe, is in that right? He got the shutout.
Yep.
They did lose like 5-0. I mean, that was the last time I checked. It was 5-0, correct?
Yeah. 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 5-0 was the final.
So, I mean, you watched at least some of it or enough to know. I mean, it was just a total laying egg, sleepwalk kind of. You just one of those nights you'd like to forget, even though they're going to have a lot of time to think about it soon, because literally Friday night tonight is going to be the last game of the season. But
yeah,
just one of those nights, huh?
It's yeah, it was definitely one of those nights. It's the kind of night where if people weren't feeling positive about the team, people would have been like just carrying how pissed they would have been about this game into August, honestly, because it was that ugly of a performance. I mean, it had all the markings of a game that would just fry fans forever, because, you know, it's Ullmark gets the shutout. It's his first shutout with the Bruins. And it comes in game 81 of the season. You know, Bergeron gets a hat trick and, you know, 4 points. Like, Taylor Hall scores a goal. Like, everything about that. Yeah. Yeah. It was that kind of game. Yeah. You know, so like, everything in that game was just like, oh God, these guys, like, this is why we hate the Bruins. Like, that kind of stuff for Sabres fans. But nobody's paid attention. Everyone's watching the draft. You know, the one guy you could say played well for Buffalo was Owen Power. So, you know, that's nice. Good. But really, like, it's a game that might as well have been played the Phantom Zone as far as it goes in Buffalo, because nobody watched, nobody gave a crap. Everybody's waiting for the Bills to pick, you know. And listen, you could have watched the entire game had it been over, and then still waited another hour and a half for the Bills pick to come up. But like, why bother? You know, like, yeah, it didn't mean anything. Like, the game that matters for people here is the one on Friday night, with, you know, it's RJ's last game of the season. It's home against Chicago, Pat Kane coming to town, you know, the whole shindig. So, you know, it's that kind of thing where, like, you just, you know, you're not going to hold it over anybody's head, you know,
sure.
Just, you know, just say you played it, never look at the tape again, and call it a day. Like, that's, that's really the most you can say about a game like that, because that's, honestly, it just doesn't matter. I mean, like, you want to see him have a nice performance and, you know, maybe kind of stick it to Boston, you know, a little bit, because, you know, you can still mess with their playoff positioning. But, you know, doesn't matter.
I low key don't. I couldn't give a shit less about them winning or losing the game. But I low key wanted Tage Thompson to score, because I wanted him to get to 38, so he'd have a little more realistic chance to get to 40 in the last game. Now he's at 37, so he would need to get a hat trick. It would be pretty cool.
That'd be a pretty nice way to do it. Like,
get a hat trick against Chicago. Against Chicago in RJ's last game, but he's at 37, and then Skinner's at 33. So maybe he could pop one in and try to, you know, and then score again Friday and get to 35. It will be interesting. I mean, again, the end of a great era with Rick Jeanneret. You know, so the last question I want to ask you is this, because you do Maintenance Day with Lance, big fan of it. It drops every Monday. The season's going to end. Is it going to be more? Now, again, you're not a Sabres fan. You talk Sabres, but you're not a Sabres fan. So I don't want to get, you know, I know you're not excited, so to speak, that they're playing better. But as a content creator, as somebody who has a podcast and is going to be doing this, is it easier for you to go into the off season? Because this is your first off season having Maintenance Day pod with Lance. You're going into the off season. Are you looking forward to producing content more, because this team is showing a lot of promise, that there are a lot of promising things you could talk about instead of the same old shit like it's been for the last, say, 10 years, where it's just going to feel dreary and feels like you're talking about something because you have to.
Yeah.
Whereas this feels like, you know, it feels like the timing with your podcast is kind of on the ground floor of something. It feels like that's being built that could turn into something special. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's definitely a lot different, because, you know, the 2 years with the Athletic, it was just like, we get halfway through the year and I'm like, John Vogel and I'd be looking at each other like, what are we going to do with this? Like,
sure,
this is,
you know,
not only is it difficult to write about, but like, nobody cared, you know, like, you know, you're trying to make money, or make money for the company anyways. But like, you're just trying to like get people to subscribe to stuff. I'm like, nobody gives a shit. You know, nobody cared. Mm-hmm. Like this time around though, it's nice to have, you know, something where people are just kind of like, all right, hey, next season's going to be better. Let's get fired up about it. The thing is, we don't know. I mean, I can't speak for Lance, but I'm just kind of like, how do we go about this? Because we haven't really had an off season like that. Cause even, you know, not since at least, since when they drafted Jack anyways, like that. I mean, that off season, there was excitement because, you know, sure, draft Eichel, they'd already traded for Kane. They traded for O'Reilly. They trade for Leonard, all that stuff. And you're just like, wow, okay, they're going for it right away. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously we know how that turned out. It didn't go that great, but, I mean, that first season went decently okay, I suppose. First season, because they got like 80 something points, which still the high mark in the last, you know, what 9 years. But like, you know, it never got better. It only got worse from there. And like, just, you know, everything kind of spiraled out. Every off season, the thing you could look forward to at the, you know, the end of the year press conferences was somebody was going to say some shit. And somebody's going to get mad and somebody, mm-hmm. and the GM would have to try to answer for it. I mean, when it was Tim Murray, you knew Tim Murray was going to say some shit. The coaches, they're firing a coach every other year. So you're just kind of like, all right, well, we got that to look forward to. So there's that too. There's none of that this year. It's going to be a nice quiet. It should be a nice quiet time. I don't think anybody's going to be like screaming their head off to get traded or moved out of town. They're not, you know, as far as I know, they're not going to fire anybody like a coach or the GM. I can't see that happening unless something absolutely bizarre happens. But
right.
And if something like that does happen, I would then start calling for the owners to sell the team immediately. Just get out, yeah. Be done with it. But, you know, it's going to be a low event, you know, final day of the season, you know, end of the season anyways, like, which is good. They need that to be that way. Like they need it to be more positive going into the off season. That now it's up to them to have a good draft, and good free agency too. You know, like they you can't really fall asleep at the wheel on that stuff this summer, because you got, as much as you have the foundation set in place for what you want to go for the future, there's some very obvious holes that they got to address, and there's some very obvious issues they got to take care of, because if they don't, we're gonna have old conversations next year.
Which is
not going to be good.
One last question, and then we're going to put a wrap on this episode, and we'll dive into it a little bit more next week. But are you stunned right now? Are you shocked that, well, we know the Sabres are going to have 3 first round picks. Well, we didn't know that because, you know, they still might not have 3 because
right.
Vegas can win the lottery. Mm-hmm. Are you stunned that Vegas might win the lottery? Are you stunned that they're in position to win the lottery right now? I never thought that with Jack Eichel going to Vegas that they were not going to make the playoffs. And I did look it up, and I ain't trying to blame your boy because I've defended Jack plenty until recently.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they were like 83%. When he made his debut with Vegas, they were like 83% to make the playoffs, and now they're out.
Yeah.
Does that stun you right now?
I'm not stunned. Just because they've been dodging, dipping, ducking, dodging, doing all the, you know, the 5 D's of, you know, dodgeball. There he is. Bobblehead Jack should be showing off on the video for everybody who's listening. But like they've been diving around the salary cap stuff, you know, since about December, you know, November, December, mm-hmm. with guys being out of the lineup, being hurt, guys coming back, and then they have to like move, you know, shift stuff around. They had a dreadful run of injuries, like right as Jack came in, right when he started playing, like these guys started dropping out of the lineup like flies. So there was a good stretch for about a month and a half maybe, where half the lineup was guys fresh out of the AHL that, mm-hmm. you know, had very limited NHL experience. And, you know, some of those lineups that Jack, you know, you see Jack, you know, centering the top line, you're like, wow, okay, that's cool. But like, you know, Mark Stone's out, Pacioretty's out, and he's playing with a bunch of guys that, you know, for lack of a better description, a lot worse off than like, it's like playing with the Rochester Americans, you know, like that's about the level of talent that he had around him, you know. And, you know, it's just, you know, and, you know, listen, people are like, injuries aren't an excuse. Like, aren't they though? Like, isn't that kind of how it works? Like, if you got half of a lineup, like that's no good. I mean, they folded at the end. Jack struggled pretty badly the last few weeks. He had a rough go of it. But they had, you know, they were working guys back in that lineup that I know damn well are not healthy. Like Max Pacioretty was, they were like, oh, his season might be over. Then he's playing the last, you know, few weeks of the year. It's like, how does that happen? Okay. Mark Stone came back and was like, oh, they were talking about him being done till, you know, maybe the end of the season, which I think they were trying to Tampa Bay Lightning their way with that one. But then things started getting a little tight and they're like, all right, Mark, time to get ready. You've got to get healthy here. Like, you got to get in the lineup. But it was just a conglomeration of everything, you know, the drama, you know, Robin Leonard drama, go figure. Like that was, you know, that stuff with like, you know, he's like the stuff that happened this past week where it was like, oh, he's injured and he's good. He has to get surgery. He's done for the year. And then he's practicing the next day. And the coach, you know, the coaches was like, I don't know where that story came from. And it's like, all right, guys, like, yeah, cool. Good work. And then he ends up, you know, missing the last few games anyways, because he had been playing hurt for like a month. Like, you know, it was just everybody was trying to do stuff hurt. And it's like, you can't do that. Like, these guys are older. Like, these aren't young dudes that are trying to do that. You know, Leonard's a little older. You know, Pacioretty's older. Like, Pacioretty's in his 30s. Leonard's pushing 30, I think. You know, Stone is still relatively young-ish, I guess. Maybe he's like 28, 29. But, like, you know, these are dudes that are, it's like, you don't want to run them out there injured. Like, that's the way you get hurt worse. And they couldn't hack it. Petrangelo was, I think, the signing, like, people are going to mock them for trading for Jack and saying, like, that's bad money, blah, blah, blah. Them signing Petrangelo for the deal they did, he did not look very good this year. He looked very rough this season. So, again, you know, whatever. To say I'm stunned that they missed the playoffs, nah, I'm not stunned. It's surprising. Like, it's definitely surprising. I mean, they have the talent. That's a talented roster, but they got to do some serious surgery this offseason because they've got 18 guys under contract and they're already $4 million over the cap.
Wow.
So they got to do some really creative work there to make that go. And, you know, listen, it's going to be fascinating to see how that ownership, because that ownership is very intense about everything. They're especially intense about winning. And, like, you know, they're, you know, the fact that they went ham on the expansion draft and making those deals, and they went to the cup final the first season. And that's not, as surprising as it was, it made sense because they understand the Vegas market. Like, it's not demanding in the sense that, you know, it's diehard fans and, you know, the fans are going to riot if they don't win. It's not that. It's the competition for the entertainment dollar.
Sure. Like,
if you're putting a losing team on the ice in Vegas, you ain't going to draw anybody because they'd
rather go see Celine Dion instead.
Right. Go see Celine, go see Britney, go do anything else and blow all my money in the casino. Like, fine, I'll do that instead of watching the dog crap team. But they got some stuff to figure out. And you know what? That's a bad spot to be in for the GM, because you're going to get, it's like what Elliot Friedman always says. Other GMs don't throw you a life preserver. They throw you anchors. And, like, people are going to be asking for trades and they're going to be like, I don't want to make that trade. It's a bad trade for us, but it's going to lose us some salary and that's okay by me. But they got nobody coming up through the pipeline. They've traded any of their really good prospects away. You know, they traded Nick Suzuki to Montreal for Pacioretty. You know, they trade Tuck and Krebs to Buffalo. You know, they've given away a lot of really good young players because they had to get those vets that have been there, that have done the thing. And it catches up to you sometimes, and it might be catching up on Vegas real quick.
Yeah, I'll say this. Regardless of how you feel about Jack or whether it's fair or not, you don't want to call him a loser yet, and you can't say, well, it's his fault Vegas didn't make the playoffs. That said, fair or not, pressure's going to be on him next year to prove that not just a guy who's immensely talented but is a loser or is a cancer in the clubhouse. They're going to have to win. He's going to have to prove it. Otherwise, you know, maybe some of the shit that might be a little bit undeserved right now, it'll be a little more deserved. But anyway, this was fun. And I'll tell you, next week's going to be another packed one because we'll review the Bills draft. We'll have plenty to talk about. I'm sure we'll have plenty of Sabres postseason reaction, locker room clean-out talk and stuff like that. We'll be back with our starting five next week, too. I don't like not doing a starting five, dude. This is a one-week-only kind of deal. But like I said, Bills... Sabres, a lot of shit going on, man. But
sometimes sports takes precedence, you know?
Exactly. Thanks as always. And of course, everyone, make sure you check out Main and State Podcast on Monday. Joe and Lance, locker cleanout will be Sunday, right?
Saturday and Sunday. The GM and the coach talk Tuesday, I think. So
point content over the next couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And then I'll kind of be in the same boat with you on this podcast. We're going to have a lot of off-season bullshit to fill up, man. But yeah. Thanks as always, buddy.
You got it, man. It's always fun.